जय राधा माधवा कुंज बियारी, जय हर माधवा कुंज बियारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन, नमन वनचारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। Jalalaba giribar dadi, Jalalaba
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta Gurushta Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga Deva Sudeva. Continued readings from Grintaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 20, Text 6. Now, we're going to be doing a special presentation this morning, so I'm just going to read a few verses and one purport, and then we're going to be showing a short film. Text 6, it's in prose, so we'll just read the translation. Translation, O King, sensory prowess, physical and mental strength, intelligence and bravery are naturally and equally manifested in all the inhabitants of the five islands headed by Plakshadvip. Next text, 7. Translation, Plakshadvip is surrounded by an ocean of sugarcane juice equal in breadth to the island itself. Similarly, there is then another island, Shalmalidvip, twice as broad as Plakshadvip, 400,000 yojanas, or 3,200,000 miles, and surrounded by an equally broad body of water called Shurasagar, the ocean that tastes like liquor. Text 8. On Shalmaladvip, there is a Shalmali tree, from which the island takes its name. That tree is as broad and tall as the Plaksha tree, in other words, 100 yojanas, 800 miles broad, and 1,100 yojanas, 8,800 miles tall. Learned scholars say that this gigantic tree is the residence of Garuda, the king of all birds and carrier of Lord Vishnu. In that tree, Garuda offers Lord Vishnu his Vedic prayers. The son of Maharaj Priyavrata, named Yajnabahu, the master of Shalmaladvip, divided the island into 7 tracts of land, which he gave to his 7 sons. The names of those divisions, which correspond to the names of the sons, are Sarojana, Saumansana, Ramakana, Devavarsha, Paribhadra, Apayayana, and Avigyata. In those tracts of land, there are 7 mountains, Svarasa, Satashringa, Vamanadev, Kunda, Mukunda, Pushpavarsha, and Sahar Sashuti. There are also 7 rivers, Anumati, Sinivali, Sarasvati, Kuhu, Ranjani, Nanda, and Raka. They are still existing. Text 11. Strictly following the cult of Varnashram Dharma, the inhabitants of those islands, who are known as Shrutidharas, Viryadharas, Vasundharas, and Ishandharas, all worship the expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, named Soma, the moon god. The inhabitants of Shamaladvip worship the demigod of the moon in the following words. By his own rays, the moon god has divided the month into 2 fortnights, known as Shukla and Krishna, for the distribution of food grains to the pitas and the demigods. The demigod of the moon is he who divides time, and he is the king of all the residents of the universe. We therefore pray that he may remain our gentle, we therefore pray that he may remain our king and guide, and we offer him our respectful obeisances. Text 13. Outside the ocean of liquor is another island, known as Kushadvip, which is 800,000 yojanas, 6,400,000 miles wide, twice as wide as the ocean of liquor. As Shamaladvip is surrounded by a liquor ocean, Kushadvip is surrounded by an ocean of liquid ghee, as broad as the island itself. On Kushadvip there are clumps of Kusha grass, from which the island takes its name. This Kusha grass, which was created by the demigods by the will of the Supreme Lord, appears like a second form of fire, but with very mild and pleasing flames. Its young shoots illuminate all directions. Purport. From the descriptions in this verse, we can make an educated guess about the nature of the flames on the moon. Like the sun, the moon must also be full of flames, because without flames there cannot be illumination. The flames on the moon, however, unlike those on the sun, must be mild and pleasing. This is our conviction. The modern theory that the moon is full of dust is not accepted in the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. In regard to this verse, Srila Vishvanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Shushapani Shukamala Shikas Tesham Brochisa. The Kusha grass illuminates all directions, but its flames are very mild and pleasing. This gives some idea of the flames existing on the moon. Omagyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadam Tikam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanan Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, I won't speak too much, but we're hearing a very scientific description of the structure of the universe. Now, just before we begin the video, we're going to be watching a film called Vedic Cosmology. It's by His Holiness Dhanavir Maharaj. And we're going to be seeing some quite remarkable things. So I just wanted to make a small comment before we begin that actually the whole process of receiving knowledge, the whole process of self-realization is based on understanding the Vedic literatures. Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all the Vedas. So The means by which we become self-realized, we know is from this favorite verse, Yasya Deve Pada Bhaktir Ta Deve Tata Guru Tasyaiti Katitya Artha Mahatmana Prakashante Mahatmana. That by implicit faith in Krishna and the spiritual master, then all the knowledge of the Vedas is revealed. So we can keep in mind, actually, that the descriptions of the Bhagavatam are authorized, authentic, and the factual explanation, actually, that the senses are limited, mundane attempts to understand things through imperfect senses will always be futile. But in our tradition, knowledge is just received by hearing, just by hearing these descriptions of self-realized souls. In other words, we have faith in Shukadeva Goswami. We have faith in so many aspects of Bhagavatam. So the descriptions, of course, in the structure of the universe may sound quite fantastic, but nonetheless, we can understand on the principle of a Vedic process that the descriptions are all authorized. So it's just nice to keep in mind, because the things that we will be reading about and things will certainly stretch our mind and our imagination. But of course, those are limited instruments. So let us now just give our attention to His Holiness Dhanavir Maharaj, who is a very expert scientist in our movement, an author, and he's created a video here, a visual journey through the universe. Hare Krishna.
The night sky, the dark blanket above our heads adorned with shining stars extending as far as the eye can see. One of the most appealing and mystifying of all sights. The beauty and the majesty of the universe have inspired awe and reverence in the best brains throughout history.
There is a perfect brain behind all the natural physical laws. This most beautiful system of the sun, planets, and comets could only proceed from the counsel and dominion of a powerful and intelligent being. Please describe the symptoms of this manifest world. What is its background? How is it created? How is it conserved? And under whose control is all this being done?
Many millennia ago, an advanced civilization revealed the mystery of the origin and nature of the cosmos. The term Vedic refers to the civilization of ancient India. Angkor Wat, the world's largest temple complex, with walls nearly 1/2 mile on each side, was built between 1112 and 1150 AD in Cambodia. Astronomy and Vedic cosmology are inseparably entwined at Angkor Wat. The central towers represent Mount Meru, the cosmic axial mountain. The 5 internested rectangular outer walls and moats indicate chains of mountains enclosing the world and the cosmic oceans beyond. Science Journal noted that Angkor Wat had encoded precise calendrical, historical, and cosmological themes into the architectural plan for the temple. As many as 18 astronomical alignments have been identified within its walls. Rarely in history has any culture given rise to a structure that so elaborately and expansively incorporates its concept of the cosmos. Similar integration of cosmology and architecture is seen in the massive Indonesian temple at Borobudur. The temple was laid out using the ancient method of Vastu Purusha Mandala. This square diagram harmonizes architecture with the annual movements of the celestial realm. The temple was constructed sometime around 775 AD. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, also known as Srila Prabhupada, author of 84 books on Vedic knowledge and founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and the Bhaktivedanta Institute. He desired to erect the world's largest planetarium depicting Vedic cosmology through modern technology. He hoped that this gigantic virtual 3D animated model would give the contemporary world access to the Vedic cosmos.
The Temple of Vedic Planetarium. Thus, we shall show the Vedic conception of planetary system within this material world and above the material world.
Vishvanandana Swami, a prominent scholar of Vedic cosmology in the line of Sripad Madhvacharya, feels that the planetarium will expand the horizons of modern cosmological knowledge.
We have a lot of information about this universe in our Vedic and Puranic scriptures. So certainly, a person who is interested in exploration, he would get some material for exploration.
The planetarium has many different exhibits, so you wanted some exhibits that would show, would create this doubt in science that they don't have the proper explanation and that the Bhagavatam has a better explanation.
In the tent. Mm. And that, you know, it would show the Vedic cosmology. Mm. And I think later on, he said that even if the scientists don't accept it, we don't care. You know, we just show what's in the Bhagavatam. We don't care whether people accept it or not, but we should just show it.
In a letter to Bhakti Swarup Damodar Swami, Srila Prabhupada delineated four phenomena to be explained in the planetarium.
He explained the passing of the seasons, the eclipses, and the phases of the moon, and the passing of day, night, etc. Then it will be a very powerful propaganda.
The literature of that period contains a wealth of cosmological knowledge encoded in Sanskrit, arguably the world's oldest language. This knowledge has the potential to enrich our understanding of the cosmos we live in. A fundamental principle of Vedic cosmology is the existence of a dual reality, material and non-material. Here we see the non-material sky filled with innumerable planets of permanent stature. Among these, the topmost planet, Goloka, is shaped like a lotus flower, and it is here that the super-intelligent designer of the cosmos, Sri Krishna, resides with his associates. Although knowledge of the non-material realm remains beyond ordinary perception, the Vedic knowledge of the material cosmos has been recognized as extraordinary by many eminent Western thinkers.
As in Hindu mythology, it is a continual dance of creation and destruction involving the whole cosmos, the basis of all existence and of all natural phenomena. Long before it became a scientific aspiration to estimate the age of the earth, many elaborate systems of the world chronology had been devised by the sages of antiquity. The most remarkable of these occult timescales is that of the ancient Hindus. Indian cosmologists, the first to estimate the age of the earth at more than 4 billion years, they came closest to the modern ideas of atomism, quantum physics. To the philosophers of India, however, relativity is no new discovery, just as the concept of light years is no matter for astonishment to people used to thinking of time in millions of kalpas. A kalpa is about 4,320,000 years.
The Hindu religion is the only one of the world's great faiths dedicated to the idea that the cosmos itself undergoes an immense, indeed an infinite, number of deaths and rebirths.
Thus, the Vedic literatures answer the question whether the cosmos always existed or it had a beginning. The temporal arena of repeated universal creations and destructions exists in a corner of the non-material sky.
This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again.
The only religion in which the timescales correspond, no doubt by accident, to those of modern scientific cosmology. Its cycles run from our ordinary day and night to a day and night of Brahma. 8.64 billion years long, longer than the age of the Earth or the Sun, and about half the time since the Big Bang. And there are much longer time scales still.
The material universe works on the principle of relative time. As such, a day of Brahma equals 8.64 billion years by earthly calculation. Since Brahma has passed half of his lifetime thus far, the age of our universe turns out to be approximately 155 trillion years.
After another Brahma century, he stirs, recomposes himself, and begins again to dream the great cosmic lotus dream.
Here we behold a form of the superintelligent being Vishnu, reclining in mystic slumber amid the causal ocean. When he exhales, millions of universes issue from his body and expand, until he inhales when all the universes return within him. The universe is a sphere encased by successive coverings of the elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, intelligence, and ego. As a coconut has its hard outer shell and inner liquid, so the universe has its outer coverings and an inner space half filled with ocean water. On that ocean, another Vishnu expansion reclined on a serpent bed while being massaged by his consort Lakshmi. From his navel arose a lotus on which Brahma was born. Initially, the universe was pitch dark and Brahma engaged in meditation. Then he was empowered to create the universe. This account of creation may appear fantastic to some, but modern scientific theories also require fantastic leaps of faith to explain the origin of the universe. This is evident from the words of eminent physicist Stephen Hawking.
Either we have failed to see 99% of the universe, or we are wrong about how the universe began.
Vedic cosmology explains that the universe is made up of 14 vertically arranged planetary systems, or lokas. Each system resembles a galaxy and comprises stars, planets, and other celestial bodies. The topmost planetary system is Satyaloka, the abode of Brahma, which is at a height of 1.87 billion miles above Earth. Below this Satyaloka planetary system is the Tapaloka planetary system, the abode of the ascetics, which is at a height of nearly 1 billion miles above the Earth. Here, the ascetics live in a solitary, serene environment conducive for yoga and meditation on transcendence. Their disciplined life of joyous austerity prepares them for returning back to the non-material world. As we move down from Tapaloka, we pass through Maharloka and Janaloka until we reach the Svargaloka planetary system, also known as heaven. The alignment of heavenly bodies around the pole star was elucidated by Srila Prabhupada in a letter.
We can see that at night, the whole planetary system is turning around. And the pole star being the pivot. Its planet has its orbit fixed, but the sun is moving up and down, north and south. It is not that we shall accept the theory that the sun is fixed and others are all going around the sun. That is not correct.
In talks with leading disciples, Srila Prabhupada compared the revolution of planets and stars to a spectacular rotating chandelier.
It's like this chandelier, and so all things moving.
And then he developed this idea of the temple of the Vedic planetarium, and how he wanted, he'd always go like this, dome, dome. He'd hold his hand like that, and he'd say, and then from the center of the dome, a chandelier. Which shows the planets according to the Vedic version. Mm-hmm. Some spectacular kind of chandelier.
This planet and his sister is rotating from east to west. And it is hanging like the chandelier, getting shelter on the pole star. Everyone can see everything.
That the pole star, or the North Star, remains fixed and does not orbit in the sky is well known to astronomers and sailors alike. Less known is the fact that the pole star rotates powerfully on its own axis. The ancient Vedic text called Matsya Purana explains, "The planets and stars are all attached to the pole star by invisible astral cords of wind called pravaha. The revolution of the pole star causes the orbital motion of other planets and stars. Through meditation, yogic astronomers visualize the planets and stars as different parts of the body of Shishumar, the transcendental dolphin. The pole star, the topmost of the heavenly planets, is like the capital of the middle universe. Here, the third form of Vishnu resides on an ocean of milk. In times of universal disturbances, the demigods headed by Brahma come here to appeal for help. The pole star is also the abode of Dhruva, a pure and exalted devotee of the Lord." Now let's look at the workings of our solar system. The mainstream scientific notion has been to portray the solar system as heliocentric or sun-centered. In the Vedic geocentric model, the sun, planets, and constellations revolve around the Earth in an approximately 24-hour period. What may surprise many is that a geocentric or Earth-centered model is also capable of explaining the cosmic phenomenon with equal, if not better, accuracy, as is confirmed by many eminent scientists.
Either CS could be used with equal justification. The two sentences, the sun is at rest and the earth moves, or the sun moves and the earth is at rest, would simply mean two different conventions concerning two different CS. We know that the difference between a heliocentric theory and a geocentric theory is one of relative motion only, and that such a difference has no physical significance. Obviously, it matters little if we think of the Earth as turning about on its axis, or if we view it at rest while the fixed stars revolve around it. Geometrically, these are exactly the same case of a relative rotation of the Earth and the fixed stars with respect to one another.
Although the heliocentric model has been widely propagated, it has never been proven.
There is no planetary observation by which we on Earth can prove that the Earth is moving in an orbit around the Sun.
mathematically, there is nothing wrong in this system because we are observing from the earth and it is the relative motion that really matters. So if you assume that the sun goes around the earth, there is nothing wrong because it's a question of relative motion.
The Vedas give amazing information about the sun. Do you know what energy runs the sun? Is it nuclear fusion? Is it volcanic energy? The Vedas say it is water. Yes, water. The sun evaporates water from all over the creation and uses it as fuel, just as lightning uses moisture. Modern science knows that sunlight contains many types of rays, such as ultraviolet, infrared, gamma rays, X-rays, etc. The Vedas describe that sunlight contains 100,000 different types of rays, each possessing specific subtle properties. Just as in a house, electricity regulates coolness, heat, light, sound, etc., so the sun's rays control heat and cold, day and night, summer and winter, darkness and light, throughout the universe. The Vedic geocentric model explains how the sun moves around the pole star, situated vertically above Earth's north pole. As the sun goes around the Earth globe, we experience day and night. The stationary Earth, unlike the pole star, does not revolve on its own axis, though it is slightly tilted toward the pole star. During summer in the northern hemisphere, the North Pole experiences 6 months of daylight. Conversely, during summer in the southern hemisphere, the South Pole experiences 6 months of daylight. These six-month periods correspond to a day and night for the demigods living in the heavenly planetary system. Vedic cosmology accounts for this phenomena by the vertical motion of the sun, technically called Uttarayana and Dakshinayana. The sun moves upward on an incline for half a year and then downward for the next half. This motion produces two effects on Earth, namely the changing of the seasons and the varying durations of day and night. Ordinary vision sees the sun to be a mere globe of fire. However, celestial vision reveals a personality residing over the sun. His name is Vivasvan, and he rides on a golden chariot pulled by seven divine horses at a speed of 16,000 miles per second. The chariot has one wheel which moves on celestial Manasotara mountain. The horizontal shaft is linked to the axial hub of the universe, Mount Meru, and the diagonal shaft is linked to the pole star. With each circular path, the wheel gradually moves laterally inward for 6 months and then outward for 6 months. Similar to the chariot's vertical motion, this lateral action fine-tunes seasonal changes on Earth. When the orbital motion of the sun is viewed from above, its illumination is seen to extend out to half of the greater Earth plane. During its orbit, the sun passes over the four cities situated in the four cardinal directions. The city over which the sun is passing experiences noon, and the city in the opposite direction experiences midnight. The two other cities experience sunrise and sunset. The zodiac is a conceptual celestial plate encompassing the entire sky. Like the face of a clock, the zodiac is divided into 12 divisions of 30 degrees each, called signs of the zodiac, or rashis. Each named according to the constellation of stars residing within them, these signs serve as a set of reference markers for measuring the movements of the moon, sun, and the planets. The zodiac completes one clockwise revolution of 360 degrees in every 24-hour period. The moon travels through the zodiac, but due to its slower angular velocity, it completes only about 347 degrees in 24 hours, falling behind by about 13 degrees. The day after the new moon day, we see one moon phase. The next day, the moon again completes 347 degrees, and we see the moon in its second phase. In this way, the moon appears to travel in the opposite direction through the zodiac. This is also called retrograde motion. Thus, the phases of the moon increase each day for 15 days until the full moon. Then the moon's phases decrease gradually by one phase each day until the dark moon night. The Srimad Bhagavatam describes the vertical positions of the planetary orbits. First above the Earth plane is the Sun at a height of 0.8 million miles. Next higher comes the Moon at 1.6 million miles, followed by the Nakshatras, 28 stars, at twice the height, then Venus, Mercury, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Saptarishi constellation, and then finally the Pole Star at a height of 30.4 million miles. Although the Sun is 0.8 million miles above the Earth plane, its horizontal distance from the Earth is much greater. Although varying with the seasons, the mean Earth-Sun distance works out to be approximately 100 million miles. 80,000 miles below the Sun is a dark or invisible planet named Rahu. When this planet comes between Earth and the Sun on the new moon day, or Amavasya, while the moon is in the same conjunction or straight line, a solar eclipse takes place. The eclipse is full for those on Earth who are situated in line with the conjunction, while others may see it partially. Similarly, when Rahu comes between the Earth and the moon on the full moon day, or Purnima, while the Sun is in the same conjunction, a lunar eclipse takes place. This is seen by anyone on Earth who can see the moon. The eclipse is either full or partial depending on the movement of Rahu. At least 5,000 years ago, the Vedas were able to predict eclipses precisely. This science is still used today with the same extraordinary accuracy.
Science is defined as a systematized knowledge of things around us. So if we prove that Vedic cosmology is systematized knowledge, that would prove, in other words, scientific nature of Vedic cosmology. Modern cosmic science is only a few centuries old, whereas our Vedic cosmology is several thousands of years old. So the modern science certainly cannot be a base for ancient Vedic cosmology.
Vedic cosmology presented from the Vaishnava point of view and as based on the Vedas will find appreciation by real scientists because it has its own scientific basis.
Science has always changed over the centuries. One theory after the other has come and replaced the former theory. And what is prevalent, everyone has accepted. But Vedanta doesn't change.
Do you say that these modern scientists have found out everything in this universe? They have not explored all the possibilities in the field of cosmology. Only they have explored to some extent. They have seen through this Nalika Yantra or the telescopes and microscopes, etc., which are having their own limitations. And people getting the information through limited devices, can they say they know everything? I don't agree with this particular point at all.
Kepler put Sun at a distance of 30 million miles from Earth. But the modern scientists placed the same Earth at a distance of 93 million miles. In 1930, Pluto came into existence. 2006, it vanished.
To realize the vision of the Vedic planetarium, Srila Prabhupada wanted a diagram depicting the structure of the universe. To this end, he engaged devotees and artists in drawing maps according to Srimad Bhagavatam.
Those three, and I was doing maps. We had some big pieces of paper, and then after this, I was there for discussions, and I would take some notes and then try to make these maps. They were present sometimes while I was making the maps. Other times, I would make the maps on my own. And I really, I only think there were about three or four maps. So I made this one big map. One of the maps was the concentric overview of Bhumandala.
Simultaneously, Srila Prabhupada sent out leading students to find a competent Vedic astronomer. After extensive searching throughout India, finally on April 30th, 1977, a reputed South Indian pundit was brought to Bombay, India, to meet Srila Prabhupada.
In the fifth canto, there is a description of the planetary system.
Yes, sir.
So, we want a diagram.
Yes, sir.
So, kindly help us. This planetary system is hanging.
Yes.
Urdhva Mula Dhosaka. Same thing is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes.
But how it is hanging and where at different situation of the planet and Plato and beings. As far as it is concerned, kindly make a time so that we shall enjoy it.
Because I'm not able to prepare the diagrams
and other things. During that summer of 77, Prabhupada had a lot of meetings with him and Tamal Krishna Maharaj to discuss how to do this very planetarium. And they actually sent people out. They tried to get people from South India. There was a lot of effort that was made, you know, to try to get a good concept of how to present it, but they couldn't find anybody who was able to do it, at least not to Prabhupada's satisfaction. So it was one of the things that Prabhupada left with us.
Srila Prabhupada's desire for the diagram was not to go unfulfilled. That elusive map was discovered by Srila Prabhupada's disciples at the holy village of Melukote, some 50 kilometers north of Mysore, Karnataka, in India. This diagram accurately depicted the entire cosmology of Srimad Bhagavatam in an ingenious yet simple rendering. The person through whom it was revealed to the world was the 19th century scholar saint Tiruvenkata Ramanuja G.R. Swami. Born in Sri Purumbudur, Tamil Nadu, Tiruvenkata Swami went on to become an acharya, or spiritual leader, in the preceptorial line known as the Sri Sampradaya. He spent several years of his life in Melukote, which 900 years earlier had been the residence place of Sripad Ramanujacharya, the most prominent acharya of the Sri Sampradaya. At Melukote, in the thousand-year-old temple, Tiruvenkata Swami studied and taught the Vedas and also worshipped the deity of Tiru Cheluva Narayan. One day, while studying the Mahabharata, a 5,000-year-old epic of ancient India, he came across some intriguing verses. In the fifth chapter of Jambukanda, Bhishma Parva of Mahabharata, it is said,
Sudarshanam pravakshami dvipastu guru nandana parimandalo maharaja dvipoyam chakra samstita yato hi purusha pashyet darshanam mukham atmana evam sudarshana dvipo drishyate chandramandale dviramshe pippalastatra dviramshe cha saso mahan sarvaushadhi samavayais sarvatapparibharita.
This Bharat Khanda is called Sudarshana Dvipa since it looks beautiful to the eyes of the onlookers. Being circular, it looks like the disc of the Lord, and it is attached to cyclic time in the form of a disc presided over by Lord Sudarshana. Bharat Khanda is in the form of a globe since all of its four corners are rounded like the bale fruit. When viewed from the moon, half of Bharat Khanda appears like the rabbit and a small people leaf, while the other half appears in the form of a big people leaf, with all of them surrounded by varieties of vegetation. Pondering the verses, he became perplexed. What on earth can a rabbit and people leaves have to do with geography or cosmography? As he sought to understand their meaning, he contemplated, meditated, and prayed. Finally, by divine inspiration, he sketched a drawing of the rabbit and the people leaves, but still remained mystified about their connection with the earth's geography. Suddenly it dawned on him that if the drawing was turned upside down, the rabbit perfectly corresponded with Europe, Asia, and Africa, while the people leaves corresponded with North America, South America, and Australia. These continents comprise our earth, which the Mahabharata calls Bharat Khanda. Vishnu Purana also describes the earth as Bharat Khanda and gives its diameter as 8,000 miles. The earth is also referred to by the name Bharat Khanda in the invocation Sankalpa Mantra chanted by Brahmana priests since time immemorial up until the present day.
Jambudvipe Bharatavarshe Bharatakhande Meroho
Vedic cosmology gives descriptions of the entire cosmos, including its subtle features. Perception and access to these subtle features, however, requires karmic qualification. Consequently, much of the cosmos described earlier, as well as parts of the cosmography about to be described, are imperceptible and inaccessible to us earthly inhabitants. Bharat Khanda is one of the nine islands of the larger and originally bow-shaped Bharat Varsha, which was divided by the sons of Sagara. Being completely surrounded by water, the islands are mutually unreachable. In the Vedas, Bharat Khanda, our earth, is also referred to by other names such as Sudarshan Dvip, Kumarika Dvip, and Navadvip, etc. Varsha, the famous mountains known as the Himalayas, are tall and immovable. Here we find an abode of Lord Shiva, the greatest of the demigods. In the center of Jambudvip stands the most extraordinary divine golden mountain called Meru. Meru is shaped like an inverted cone, and it is the sporting place for the demigods. Around Meru are many supporting mountains called Kesara. Jambudvipa is 0.8 million miles in diameter and is surrounded by the saltwater ocean of the same width. On top of Mount Meru is a resort of Brahma called Manovati. The famous celestial river Ganges descends to the center of Manovati and then flows out into four directions. Surrounding Manovati in the eight directions are the resort cities of the chief demigods. One of these cities is Amaravati, the resort of Indra, king of heaven. King Indra lives here in majestic opulence, attended to by musicians, dancers, and reciters.
This is what you call as Brahmasurana, the place of the palace.
Knowledge of Meru and the cosmography of the greater earth has been preserved and taught carefully by learned scholars in the preceptorial line known as the Madhva Sampradaya. The greater earthly planetary system extends out to the edges of the universe and has a diameter of 4 billion miles. Known as Bhumandala, shaped like a lotus flower, it has seven concentric islands and oceans with Mount Meru as its pericarp. The seven oceans respectively contain salt water, sugarcane juice, liquor, clarified butter, milk, emulsified yogurt, and sweet drinking water. Sometimes Vedic cosmology is misconstrued as portraying the earth to be a flat disk. This flat earth misconception arises partly due to our inability to understand Vedic nomenclature. A single object may be referred to by several names, and a single name may refer to several objects. For example, the term earth may be used to describe at least six different aspects of cosmology. The earth we live on is indeed a globe, as explained by the Sanskrit word parimandale, meaning spherical, used in the Mahabharata text. The flat disk refers to the greater earthly planetary system of Bhumandala. Four elephants of inestimable size are placed at the four directions for balancing the greater earth. Below the earthly planetary system are seven subterranean realms named Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Mahatala, Rasatala, and Patala, which do not receive sunlight and which are inhabited primarily by demoniac living entities. To reach the first one, one must go 80,000 miles downward through underground tunnels. At successive depths of 80,000 miles are the remaining six netherworlds, all of which are fully developed underground civilizations. In the fourth level downward, Talatala Loka, lives the magical architect Maya Danava, who has designed many brilliantly decorated cities where proud materialists reside. Below the netherworlds are the 28 hellish planetary systems. The demigod of justice, Yamaraj, judges the unrighteous human beings after their deaths and sends them to one of these planets. There, errant souls are administered appropriate punitive measures corresponding to their misdeeds. The earthly and subterranean planetary systems rest upon one of the hoods of the gigantic divine serpent, Shesha. Shesha, in turn, is held up by the colossal transcendental tortoise, Kurma. And Kurma resides in the ocean that fills half the universe. Thank you.
had great stalwarts in Kerala, like Madhava, who gave infinite series formulae for sine, cosine, pi, nearly 2 centuries before Newton was born, to teach calculus to the world.
Albert Einstein also recognized the contribution of Vedic mathematics to science.
We owe a lot to the Indians, who taught us how to count, without which no worthwhile discovery could have been made.
Vedic cosmological knowledge is revealed in 2 primary texts, namely the Puranas and the Jyotisha. Among the Jyotisha texts, the Surya Siddhanta is prominent and gives precise mathematical formulae for calculating planetary motions. The Surya Siddhanta contains extraordinary astronomical calculations which predate modern science itself. However, many contemporary scholars have been unable to understand Puranic cosmology. Nevertheless, detailed studies of both texts show that their foundational astronomical principles are identical. For instance, both calculate atomic time as the time it takes for the sun to pass over an atom. Similarly, both texts calculate the frequency of planetary revolutions in terms of their retrograde motion with respect to the zodiac. Furthermore, the apparent contradictions between the two texts are resolved by using the formula for converting the actual distances recorded in the Puranas into angular velocity stated in the Jyotisha. This Surya Siddhanta, originally spoken ages ago by Surya, the sun god, was translated and commented upon in the 20th century by the brilliant astronomer named Bimala Prasad Siddhanta Sarasvati.
Vedic thought should be preserved. If you are not able to interpret, someone will interpret at a later stage. After a millennium, let someone come and interpret. We have to preserve that. The Vedic thought, Vedic knowledge has to flow from generation to generation.
I feel that there should be a planetarium strictly according to Vedic cosmology. And once the planetarium is constructed, probably at least we'll give a chance to those people to comment upon it and to discard it or to accept it, etc.
Vedic planetarium apparently appears to be different from the ideas of the modern scientists. But what is more important is whether Vedic planetarium idea by itself is scientific. If it is scientific, the modern scientists will have to revise their ideas about their own planetarium.
This planet is required on all these things. Give you a vast knowledge of the universe and so on for so many people. So you are only, you are the one, not only the person to enjoy, you will allow all others to know about it. So that is really a commendable work and has to be done.
If you construct a planetarium, according to our Bhagavatam, so a Westerner who is wise, and who is after discovery, certainly he will be interested in this. There is a famous proverb, one figure is worth 1,000 words. I think I can extend this proverb, one model is worth 1,000 figures. Even if you put a number of figures, you will not get the correct picture. So if you construct a three-dimensional model, certainly you can perceive things better.
Albert Brush Ford, the great-grandson of automobile magnate Henry Ford, speaks about how he became involved with the Vedic planetarium.
I was in Detroit in 1976. We had purchased the Bhaktivedanta Cultural Center. And had spent a year getting it fixed up, and Prabhupada came for a visit. And so it was his first visit there, and he was entertaining some guests up in his room at the cultural center. And he was explaining to them about the Vedic planetarium. And so after he talked to them for a while, he turned to me and he said, so how do you like this idea about the Vedic planetarium? And I said, that's a very nice idea, so Prabhupada. Sounds like a very interesting idea. And so he said, kind of half jokingly, okay, you can help finance. You know, and then we all laughed, myself and some of the other boys had to laugh. But just at that moment, someone took a picture. So I had at home, I had that picture sitting on my desk. So at that moment, I thought about planning the scene that I should be involved in helping finance the Temple of the Planetarium. So 30 years later, here I am.
Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.